underway between resistance groups and regime forces. Israeli warplanes targeted Gaza City, a UN-run school in the Shati refugee camp, as well as areas near Al-Quds Hospital. Israeli forces have threatened more than once to bomb the hospital, where about 14,000 civilians are currently seeking shelter, in addition to hundreds of sick and wounded people. Israeli jets also bombed the Jabalia refugee camp for the third time in the last 3 days. Almost 200 people were killed and nearly 800 wounded in the first two bombings of the camp on Tuesday and Wednesday. Scores of people remained unaccounted for. The UN Human Rights Office said the Israeli raids on the refugee camp could amount to war crimes.
Given the high number of civilian casualties and the scale of destruction following Israeli airstrikes on Jabalia refugee camp, we have serious concerns that these are disproportionate attacks that could amount to war crimes.
Well, the UN chief also decried the regime's raids. Antonio Guterres said he's appalled by the killing of Palestinians, including women and children, in Israel's airstrikes on Jabalia's residential areas. Since October the 7th, attacks on Gaza have claimed the lives of over 9,000 people, including over 3,700 children. Palestinians slam international community's inaction and failure to stop the Israeli crimes.
Where is the whole world? Save us. Children are dying. I swear they're children. Those saying that there are Hamas leaders here, I swear there are no leaders. Swear to God it's women and children who are dying here. We have mainly retrieved bodies of women and children.
We have retrieved human remains, including martyrs, children and women. To be honest, it's a disaster that extends to the entire world. If countries around the world had even a modicum of shame, they wouldn't have allowed us to end up in this situation.
Meanwhile, on the ground, heavy fighting is underway northwest of Gaza City. Israeli forces reportedly carried out raids on the Al-Shati refugee camp, the Al-Nasr neighborhood, and in Sheikh Radwan. The Qassam Brigade says its fighters targeted at least two Israeli tanks and bulldozers in northwestern Gaza. Israel says 17 of its soldiers have been killed since the launch of the ground invasion of Gaza. The Yemeni army says that it has launched a large group of drones at several targets deep within Israel. The Yemeni armed forces added in their statement that the drones had hit their targets. This was the latest in a spate of the Yemeni army's attacks on targets in Israel since the regime began its brutal aggression against the besieged Gaza Strip. Yemen's army added that it will continue operations in support of the oppressed Palestinian people until the Israeli aggression on Gaza stops. On Tuesday, the Yemeni army had carried out a series of operations against Israel with drones and ballistic missiles. A similar strike was also conducted on Friday. Ashraf Shannon is joining us now from Khan Yunis in southern Gaza with all the latest updates from on the ground in the Gaza Strip. Ashraf, it's great to have you with us. We had breaking news just moments ago that the death toll has now risen above 9,000. At least 3,700 children have been killed as a result of the Israeli onslaught on Gaza. Many humanitarian officials have stated that the 9,000 killed could just be the tip of the iceberg.
Well, I believe that too, because already nearly 5,000 people are missing. We don't know what happened to them. They could have evaporated by the heat of the Israeli bombs, or are still, or their bones shattered under the rubble, or buried somewhere under the rubble because of the use of heavy explosives to target civilian infrastructure and the civilian homes in Gaza. So there are more than 9,000. And at least 4,000 more are also dead, but they're missing under the rubble, and nobody can find them right now because you don't have excavators or bulldozers to sift through the rubble. They don't even have the manpower to do that. And even when civil defense workers were trying to dig the bodies of dead people or trying to save people, they were also targeted by Israeli warplanes who killed them as well. It's also worth mentioning that at least 70 UNRWA employees from Gaza have been killed since this fighting began, as Israeli forces don't distinguish between civilians, civilian Palestinians, and also those who work for international humanitarian agencies. those UNRWA employees, they were clearly wearing their blue vest with UN insignia on them, and they were killed by Israeli warplanes, even driving their cars, UN cars, they were killed. And this is why the World Health Organization said it will not be working inside Gaza unless it gets guarantees from the Israeli regime that its staff will not be targeted by bombing or shooting. Now, the Shifa Hospital, Gaza's biggest hospital, has made a final warning today that it will shut down very, very soon, maybe by midnight tonight, and stop working completely due to lack of fuel. Spokesman for the Ministry of Health, Dr. Ashraf Al-Qudra, called on the international community and all international organizations to interfere and exert pressure on the Israeli regime in order to allow the entry of fuel, just to keep the hospital running, just to keep the lights on, to keep those on life support alive. There's massacres taking place every hour of the day, every day. And since yesterday, according to Dr. Qudra, 256 Palestinians were killed in the Gaza Strip. And this is not counting those who are missing.
Ashraf, I'm going to ask you to stay with us. So we're now going to bring in Yusuf Maori from the Yemeni capital, Sana'a, as well. Yusuf, I hope we have you right now in this segment of the program. The Yemeni army, as we know, has launched a large group of drones at several targets deep within Israel. The Ansarla movement in Yemen has stated and pledged that it will come to the aid of the Palestinians, and it will continue to target Israeli positions until the Israeli aggression on Gaza stops. Bring us up to speed on the latest from the resistance front in Yemen.
Well, whatever the leader of Yemen's revolution, Sayyid Abdel Malik al-Houthi, says he's going to do, he delivers on that promise. And 2 weeks ago, he made it very clear. He sent a warning to Israel and to the U.S. that Yemeni ballistic missiles and drones would target deep into Israeli territory or Palestinian territory that is occupied by the Israeli regime, and that this would be a consistent series of attacks on the Israeli regime. And this is because the Yemeni people are, you know, they put pressure on the Ansar al-Allah government, and the Ansar al-Allah government felt it was necessary and that it was an Islamic obligation to launch attacks against the Israeli regime or to save Yemeni people. What's happening is very clear to the Yemeni people. It's genocide. It's a mass massacre. It's mass murder. You name it. You name any types of atrocities that's being committed. All types of atrocities are being committed by the Israeli regime under the supervision of the United States and Western allies. And the Yemeni government, backed by Ansar al-Allah, they're not going to stand by idle and allow this genocide to continue without having a say-so. So because Israel and the U.S., they ignored the warnings, and they actually contacted the Sana'a government, and they threatened them with sanctions. They threatened the Yemeni government with sanctions if Ansar al-Allah gets involved. The Ansar al-Allah government, they don't fear Israel. They do not fear the United States. And they felt that it was an Islamic obligation to launch these attacks against the Israeli regime. And they will continue to launch these attacks until the aggression on Gaza discontinues.
Yusuf, some of the comments by leader of Iran's Islamic Revolution, Ayatollah Sayyid Ali Khamenei, came yesterday, where, first of all, he expressed discontent and condemned and also said that the world will remember how the likes of the United States, the UK and France, they stood against the people of Gaza during these dark hours. I want you to elaborate on those comments for us as well. And also, the leader called for Islamic countries to stop exports of oil and basic commodities and necessities to Israel in response to the regime's bloodshed in the Gaza Strip. Walk us through these keynote comments made by the leader.
Well, the leader of Iran's revolution, he understands that war is not just targeting Palestinians. It's targeting basic humanity. It's targeting basic human decency. There's no other states or empires that would try to make it, you know, pass this genocide as a normal act of engagement, of war engagement. It's very, very disheartening for people around the world to sit back and allow such genocide to continue in the most pernicious, despotic manners. So the war that Israel is launching is being supported by the West. The West has a long history of neocolonialism in the Muslim world. They rule Muslims, they occupy Muslim lands based on the factor of fear. And they think that they can just commit massacre against the Palestinians, take over their land, rule with brutal dictatorship and oppression, while nobody in the Muslim world or in the region would take action against them. So this is why the leader of the Islamic Revolution and the leader of Yemen's Ansar Allah movement are calling for Islamic unity. They're calling on Muslim armies to mobilize and to bring an end to the oppression that the Palestinian people are facing. And one of the reasons why the Yemeni government launched these attacks is because they want to lead by example. And they want the world to see and the world to know that they don't have to be in fear of U.S. supervision, of U.S. imperialism in the Muslim world. It is an obligation to take action to save Muslims. And this is, you know, the leader of Yemen's revolution, he called it jihad. And of course, according to Islam, jihad is fighting to bring an end to oppression, is fighting to defend Muslim honor, Muslim lives, and Muslim land. And this is exactly what the obligation of jihad demands, according to the leader of Yemen's revolution. And this is just an outcry for the Muslim world to unite and to mobilize militarily in order to bring an end to this despotic aggression against the Palestinians. Israel has made it very clear they're not going to stop this aggression. They're hell-bent on taking over Gaza. They're hell-bent on destroying, carpet-bombing the entire land of Gaza. And they're not going to stop until they achieve their goal, unless they are brought to a sudden halt, unless the Muslim world mobilizes and confronts the Israeli regime militarily. It's simply not enough to just condemn the Israeli regime. It's not enough to condemn the U.S. military support to the Israeli regime. Military actions must be undertaken in order to bring an end to the suffering of the Palestinians.
Right, and you mentioned the U.S. support. In addition to the rising anti-Israeli sentiments that are at an all-time high in the region right now, coupled with that, specifically amongst the resistance axis, anti-U.S. sentiment is also rising as well. So we might even, as we've seen before with the resistance front in Iraq, even U.S. bases were targeted, and the United States was warned explicitly that if it would get more involved, with the Israeli onslaught on Gaza, they would see repercussions as well.
Right, and the U.S. has made it very clear that they are fighting alongside the Israeli regime in Gaza. You have the U.S. Marines Delta Force that's currently on the ground conducting operations in the Gaza area where the clashes are taking place. Look, the U.S. needs to come to terms with the reality, and that is the world is no longer in fear of its brute military force. They've seen what happened to them in Iraq. They've seen what happened to the U.S. Army in Afghanistan, 20-year war, which ended with them facing utter humiliation and basically leaving all of their weapons and equipment and just taking off. They have to face the world, face political opposition. They're going to face military opposition. We see this taking place in Syria. We see this taking place in Iraq, where U.S. military bases are being targeted. There's also, there are over 800 military bases worldwide. I think there's 400 of them in the Middle East. And I think the Muslim world is sending the message, or the axis of resistance is sending the message to the U.S. that their interests in the Middle East will be targeted. Their military bases will be targeted. Their oil and a natural resource shipment route, which is Bab el-Mandeb, which is the Swiss Canal, those will also be targeted. They will prevent and European shipment from these waterways, right? So I think this was also made clear by Yemen's revolutionary leader, who basically alluded to the fact that U.S. military manifestations in the Red Sea will be targeted. So we've seen the Yemeni army target deep into Israeli territory. I think what's in store in the coming days is that U.S. warships, U.S. Navy fleets, and U.S. military bases in the region will also be targeted from Yemen.
Thanks a lot, Youssef Maori, joining us from the Yemeni capital, Sana'a. And also thanks to our correspondent, Asha Shannon, who was speaking to us earlier from Khan Yunis in southern Gaza. The World Health Organization calls for speeding up aid deliveries to Gaza, which is grappling with the severe humanitarian crisis caused by Israel's relentless strikes on civilians in the besieged territory.
We immediately established a warehouse, and the team is working against all odds and risk to their security to deliver life-saving medical supplies to the hospital. The WHO supplies that came into via Rafah have been immediately distributed to 7 hospitals all over Gaza. Fortunately, these essentially needed supplies are merely a drop in the ocean of needs. WHO calls for an urgent, accelerated access for humanitarian aid, including fuel, water, food, and medical supplies into and throughout the Gaza Strip.
Ezzedine Lulu is a doctor in Gaza City's Al-Shifa Hospital. He describes the dire situation the medical complex is facing amid ongoing Israeli airstrikes on the besieged territory. He says thousands of displaced Palestinians are sheltering at the hospital, squeezing in corridors with no clean water and electricity. Let's take a listen.
I want to show you the reality that you most probably do not see in the media. I don't know if I am working in a hospital or a refugee camp. The hallways of the Al-Shifa Hospital became a floor for the forcefully displaced Palestinians by the Israeli bombings and destruction of homes. I can heal wounds, I can stop the bleeding, but I can't heal the coldness of those children's bodies. I can see them shaking while they are sleeping. They have nothing to cover themselves with. Winter is coming. The nights are getting colder. The food is running out and we are already drinking unclean water. Stop the inhumanity.
Iran's president says the United States is the root cause of the crimes being committed against civilians in Gaza. Addressing a large crowd of people in Kurdistan's province, Ebrahim Raisi said Washington supports the Israeli regime, which has killed thousands of innocent Palestinians. He blamed the U.S. and certain other Western governments for breaching human rights. The president noted that Western countries claim to be advocates of human rights, but they are in fact the biggest rights violators. He explained that people around the world have been awakened to the realities and can easily tell the friend and foe apart. That's it with the world news for now. Bye, everybody.
English Radio, a window to peace of mind and spirituality. You can tune in to RIB English Radio 24 hours a day. We are with you. Are you with us? Are you with us? Are you with us? This is our voice from the heart of the Islamic Republic of Iran, RIB English Radio.
Hidden Files. That's right, 40 acres and a mule. After 246 years of slavery, that is what African Americans who had been enslaved were promised by the U.S. government. Well, that was back in 1865, and although that was no real compensation for 2.5 centuries of slavery, even that promise was not kept towards Black Americans. It became symbolic of all the other promises, laws, programs that were supposed to bring about more economic parity with whites for Black Americans, but never took place. Hello, and welcome to Hidden Files. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Today, we're going to take you on a journey that started centuries ago on the African continent and yet still has proportional consequences on millions of African Americans today. Estimates vary from $6 trillion to $60 trillion, the value of those 40 acres and a mule today. Well, the wealth never paid to the former slaves nor their descendants. The generational wealth that was never passed down, that opportunity, like so many others, that was never provided to blacks, while endless opportunities, grants, raises, stipends, etc., were given to white Americans. The results show a staggering difference between black and white wealth, even in America today.
In 2019, the median white household was worth $188,200. The median black household held $24,100 in wealth. White households had 7.8 times more wealth than blacks. In 2020, whites made up 60% of the U.S. population, but held 84% of the total household wealth. Black households, who constituted 13.4% of the U.S. population, held 4% of the total household wealth. White households inherit over 5.3 times more than black households. And white households are 2.8 times more likely than black households to inherit any wealth.
Well, we're going to dig into this issue further with our first guest, Cam Howard.
Cam Howard is a reparations expert who has been fighting for decades to get reparations for black Americans. He has addressed the United Nations and has traveled the world presenting the case for reparations for African Americans. He's an administrator for NCOBRA, the National Coalition of Blacks for Reparations in America.
Thanks so much for being with us. Do you think that black Americans should get reparations, and if so, why?
Well, I certainly believe that blacks in this country should get reparations. And it's primarily because of, you know, two reasons. One, there's never been justice and fairness in any large measure for African Americans, people of African descent in this country. As you know, we came here as stolen, kidnapped people from the continent of Africa to slave in the cotton fields and tobacco fields and rice fields in America, and then later in some of the factories during the industrial age. The tremendous amount of crimes were committed against us during the period of enslavement. But then after the period of enslavement, we had a brief period called Reconstruction in this country where there was some semblance of fairness and justice. Then that was followed by another 80 plus years of terroristic apartheid by white supremacist organizations in this country that removed, again, all notions of fairness and justice in the areas of education, in areas of economics, in the area of labor, employment, et cetera. There was criminal punishment, criminal justice. There's been no fairness. There was no fairness. It was an apartheid system backed by the terror of the state. And then after the Jim Crow period, apartheid period in this country, in 1965 and the 60s, as a result of the civil rights movement, we had a small window of fairness and justice with the Civil Rights Act, the Fair Housing Act, and the Voting Rights Act that was passed. And then in the 70s, we had a semblance of fairness with affirmative action. But all those things have been stripped down, taken away the teeth of what should have been given to us in the area of fairness and justice. They've been watered down. So when you look at the police violence in our communities, it's still a continuation of the non-fair and non-just treatment that we receive in this country. So, you know, only a brief, very brief periods in this country of African Americans ever received the type of fair and just treatment that immigrants and people who are, you know, other Americans or people who just come to America, they receive just by being on within these boundaries. But African Americans as a whole, we have not shared any type of governmental fairness and justice for the long haul. Secondly, reparations are due because of the tremendous injury that we still suffer from today as a result of these hundreds of years, centuries of mistreatment in this country. When you look at every area of people of activity in this country, Blacks on the bottom of every good list and on the top of every bad list, whether it's education, whether it's housing, whether it's criminal punishment, whether it's wealth, whether it's, you know, health, maternal mortality, infant mortality, all these things, you see a stark difference between Black lived experience and white lived experience in this country.
Well, what type of reparations are you proposing?
We look at reparations in the forms of, from the international law standpoint, of gross crimes committed by a state against the civilian population, where that tends to lay out what is known as full reparations. And there's five basic components. First component is cessation and guarantees of non-repetition. First, you must stop the bad acts. You must eliminate the policy that disproportionately negatively affect people of African descent in this country. That's first and foremost. The criminal justice laws, the housing laws, the economic laws that exist, the disproportionate resource allocation toward education and other aspects of our community. First, you must cease those policies and then put in place structures that ensure that those policies don't show up again. Like when enslavement ended, enslavement resurfaced for another 45 years in the form of convict leasing, in the form of sharecropping, in the form of debt peonage, where, you know, that we still existed in enslavement, but it was not called enslavement. So we need to stop these bad policies that exist today and make sure that we put in structures that they don't resurface. The second component of full reparations is restitution. How do you return the people back to where they would have been had these crimes not committed? So we're talking centuries of crime. So there's going to be multiple generations of repair that's necessary in the areas of education, in the areas of economic development and wealth building and employment and these type of areas and land acquisition and housing. All these areas have to be addressed and redressed with targeted resources. The third component is compensation. When restitution doesn't alleviate a situation, the compensation is an obligatory form of reparations under international norms. And we certainly know that in order for us to have some type of parity and wealth in this country, there's going to have to be some type of direct compensation. We don't know what that be and how much it would be, but certainly we are fighting for that because it is, again, obligatory under international law to redress the situation in its entirety. The fourth component of full reparations is satisfaction. How do you return the dignity back to a people whose dignity was eroded as a result of the crimes you committed against them? Sometimes an apology will do that. Other times, you know, museums, markers, removing a statuary, creating monuments, new monuments, curriculum overhaul, truth and reconciliation commissions, those type of things lend to dignity. Return or satisfaction. And then the fifth component is rehabilitation for the mind, heart, and spirit damage to the people as a result of the crimes. Black people in America have the worst health profile among any people. Our health profile is similar to those in quote-unquote third world countries in certain areas. Highest rates of cancer, highest rate of heart attack, highest rates of infant mortality, maternal mortality, as I stated, highest rates of breast cancers among women, the highest rates of testicular cancer or prostate cancer among men. I mean, the health profile is terrible. And we know now through transgenerational epigenetic inheritance that that health profile is a result of the historical trauma we've experienced as a people in this country.
Thank you so much for being with us right here on Hidden Files, Mr. Cam Howard. We're going to take a look at a few instances that have taken place over the years and why African Americans are demanding reparations. You know, slavery launched modern capitalism and actually turned the United States into the wealthiest country in the world. Looking at this cotton production, I mean, by the 1830s, 77% of U.S. cotton was used for the British textile industry. And look at that, 2.25 billion pounds of cotton in 1859. And, you know, the cotton actually built New York City as a commercial and financial center. And if you look at the whole worth after the outbreak of the Civil War and the values of slaves, $3 billion, 48% of total wealth in the South in 1860. So very valuable commodity. The emancipation, though, of African Americans did not bring about any type of economic freedom. There were continual policies to make sure that they never got their rights, starting off, of course, with not getting the 40 acres and a mule. However, the slave owners in the South, they actually got compensation after the Civil War, $300 per slave loss or freed. And throughout the time, the safety nets for other Americans were never in place for African Americans, not the loans, not the access to affordable housing in good neighborhoods. There was redlining to prevent them. And even when they could take off a little and be successful in some type of business, as we see like Black Wall Street, then there were efforts to totally eliminate and annihilate any type of success that they had. I mean, this is just a very, very small example of some of the reasons why African Americans are demanding reparations.
Kalonji Jamachanga currently serves as co-chair of the Urban Survival and Preparedness Institute and is co-founder of Black Power Media. He has fought on multiple fronts, tackling issues from local and national police brutality cases to international human rights violations. Under Kalonji's direction, as founder and national coordinator of the FTP movement, programs such as International Feed the People and the National Coalition to Combat Police Terrorism have matured and developed. He has shared his experiences in the best-selling book, How to Build a People's Army, and the documentary, Organizing is the New Cool.
Thank you so much for being with us right here on Hidden Files, Mr. Kalonji Jamachanga. What's your perspective in general regarding reparations?
You know, when I think of reparations, you know, most people think reparations is money. That's not what we're talking about. Our first order of operation is our political prisoners, because like any other civilized nation, whenever there is war or there's any type of, fighting or what have you, any type of disagreements, the first thing before anything can go down is they want their captives back. You know what I mean? So we want our political prisoners back first and foremost. And it is my belief that if we are, the question around reparations should also include the continent of Africa. I think that, the first thing should be, they should be paying reparations to folks on the continent because they stole not only the land, not only the minerals and the wealth, they stole us, they stole humans, we totally believe that reparations should be paid, but will it be paid? We don't believe this country is capable of that type of accountability or respect for us as a whole.
What type of reparations in general do you think would be necessary?
You know, land is definitely, is necessary. You know, we're not just talking about some cash, because we know that the U.S. dollar doesn't mean anything. And we know that if they gave us reparations with cash, then they'll just raise the prices up. They'll hike the prices up. You know, so, you know, that's a foolish notion that all we want is money. You know, we know that the American dollar has no real value across the globe. They place their own value on it. You know, so we don't want anything that they can take away. What we'd really like you said, is to be left alone. What we really like is to folks to say, you know what, we want to return these goods. We want to make good with our people. But we know that under a capitalist society, we know that capitalism is a violent system. You cannot have capitalism without the pain and suffering of others. They package it well. They make you feel comfortable and make you feel like, you know, yes, you should be a part of the capitalist system and you should grow and, you know, everything's going to be all right. But it's not the case. They let a few quote unquote African-Americans and a few so-called minorities, or should we say other oppressed people, give them the illusion of power. And, you know, power is about self-determination. So if you don't have self-determination and you don't have a place of your own and you don't have your own tongue and your own culture, then again, you are a displaced person. You are a person that's running around trying to find themselves. And that is how they have us right now. So we're talking about 500 years of this practice of terrorism. So we must understand that, unfortunately, in this country in particular, when you are, you know, their success has to equal your failure. Someone has to be at the bottom and someone has to be at the top. And in the capitalist system, the folks at the bottom will always get stepped on in order to benefit those who are at the top, the oppressors.
In your perspective, what are some of the systemic efforts that have taken place in order to prevent African Americans from achieving equality?
The whole notion of equality is a myth, because we were brought here as chattel slaves, as surplus labor. We were brought here as, you know, as treated like domesticated animals, you know. So they looked at us as property. They never looked at us as equal, you know. Even on paper, they said we were 3/5 of human beings. They didn't even consider us a human being. Matter of fact, the quote-unquote forefathers of this country, they treated us like objects, you know. Even when you talk about folks like George Washington, these are, you know, most of the men who happen to be on the money here, the dollar bills and the cash and the coins, these are former slave masters. You know, these are folks who gave away Africans, and we don't consider ourselves slaves. We were enslaved, because we weren't slaves when we encountered these folks. So we were enslaved Africans. So, these are folks who literally gave us away. George Washington's wife gave Africans away for wedding gifts. They gave us away like we were poodles, or like we were some type of plants, or some type of exotic horse. You know what I'm saying? Like we were camels. We were treated as nothing more than, you know, like I said, domesticated animals. Like we were tricks. We performed for these people. We worked for these people. We built for these people. And in turn, we were enslaved, we were tortured, and to this very day, we are victims of a systematic oppression, which, again, stems from capitalism and global white supremacy. This is what it's all about. You know, capitalism and enslavement are Siamese twins.
We're just about out of time, Mr. Changa, but do you have any final thoughts?
I would like to say that people of the world, oppressed people, quote-unquote third world people, we have to resist imperialism at every turn. We have to, you know, like it says in Islam, we have to change things with our hands, and if we can't change it with our hands, we have to speak out against it. And if we don't speak out against it, then we at least have to hate it in our hearts. We have to remember that we are here for a limited time, and we have the right to exist. We have the right to love. We have the right to be our natural selves. And no man, woman, or child should be able to exploit, dominate, or oppress us.
Very powerful words. Thank you so much for being with us right here on Hidden Files. From 1619, when the first Africans were enslaved in what would become the United States, until the present, Africans and their descendants in that country have never been considered as equals with their white counterparts. They have been the victims of systemic terrorism as they have built that country, and now they are demanding their fair share of it. Will they get reparations? Will their demands be met? Not likely, but we will continue to follow their story, their cases, and their demands for justice. And we'll bring you all the latest on that right here at Hidden Files. And make sure you join me and the team right here next week as we dig into another Hidden File. I'm Marzia Hashimi. Goodbye for now.
Selection of Ayatollah Khamenei's viewpoints.
It guides us through life. It has taught us everything. We should learn and appreciate what it gives us. And try to apply them to our daily lives. How is it possible? By means of Quran.
این خوندن قرآن و تلاوت قرآن قدم اول است برادران من این قدم آخر نیست
Reading and recitation of the Quran is the first step, brothers, not the last one.
هو الذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين
It is he who has sent his apostle with the guidance and the religion of truth, that he may make it prevail over all religions, though the polytheists should be averse.
والذي أرسل رسوله بالهدى ودين الحق ليظهره على الدين كله ولو كره المشركون
تلاوت قرآن با صوت خوش با آداب که شیوه خاصی دارد موسیقی خاصی دارد روش خاصی دارد اینها چیزایی لازم نیست
Recitation of the Quran in nice tones should be performed according to particular methods and tones
اما این کافی نیست
But it's not enough
ولا تتفرقوا فيه
مشکل بزرگ مسلمانان دنیا دوری از قرآن دوری از قرآن از قرآن
Muslims major problem is losing touch with the Quran Quran Quran
کتاب الله
Good morning, good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are and wherever you are listening to us.
The keys of life.
The world is a very, very big house, many people living in many rooms. We must open all the doors up, we must unlock them all today, throw all the keys away.
Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim, brothers, sisters, listeners, assalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh, and welcome to the program Keys of Life, Mafatihul Hayat. We were talking about marriages before. One of the issues in terms of marriage, it's not much of an issue rather than something that we need to do, and that is being nice and kind to our wives. As we call it in Arabic or in Islamic terms, ikramu zawja. And also there is ikramu zawj, so being kind to the husband, as much as being kind to the wife. Islamically, or through the hadith of the Ahl Bayt, through the verses of the Quran, we've been told to show kindness, love, mercy towards our spouses, to express words of love, words of emotions, words of compassion, words of mercy. So not only a person needs to take, you know, good care of himself, how he presents himself to his wife, but also what he says to his wife. Amir al-Mu'mineen salamullah alayhi, in his wasiyah, in his trust to his son Muhammad bin Hanafiyyah, he says to him, he says, a woman is a beautiful, fragrant flower. Rayhan, right? She's a very soft, delicate, fragrant flower. And he says, take care of it. Fadariha ala kulli hal. You need to constantly be taking care of that delicate flower because it's a delicate flower, right? If you give it too much sun, the petals will die and will, I don't know, burn. If you give it too much water, it will die. You don't give it enough sun, it will die. So it requires extra care. So he says, ala kulli hal, constantly take care of it. Wahjana suhba, and be constantly a nice companion to your wife. If you do these two things, fayasfu aishuk, your life will be beautiful. Your environment will be beautiful. So safa is a kind of, you know, when you have water and you mix dirt with it, the water becomes dirty, right? And muddy. If you leave the water for a while, the dirt will settle and the water will become crystal clear. This is what safa means, a crystal clear. So the relationship becomes a crystal clear and beautiful if we follow the advice of Amir al-Mu'mineen that he gave to his son, Muhammad ibn Hanafiyyah. Delicate. Treat with them kindly. Treat them nicely. Take care of them. So constantly you need to monitor their state. You need to monitor their mental state, their physical state. You need to monitor their needs. So there's a 24 surveillance from the husband on his wife to see how she is. And become a nice companion. She's not just a household item that you bring and you leave in the house. She's a human being at the end of the day. Needs to be treated well. If that happens, then life would be a lot easier. And the same goes to the female as well. Because this is not just a one-sided relationship. It's a partnership. The female also needs to monitor and take care of her husband in the same. Let us take a short break and then we will come back.
Ayatollah Javadi Amali, the author of the book Mafatih al Hayat, The Keys of Life. This book, Mafatih, ought to be in two volumes. One volume, the present volume, Mafatih al-Janan, is on the level of the lofty rewards for praying, fasting, etc. But the book lacks its second volume, which ought to be on subjects like the lofty rewards for planting a tree. Imam has mentioned both of these subjects. The very Imam, who has stressed out the reward for praying, has also highlighted the reward for planting a tree. There are generous amounts of reward for protecting the environment. When growing wheat, take some in your hand and say these prayers. These are what the very Imam has mentioned. We lack this second volume in Islamic world.
Welcome back, brothers and sisters, and you are listening to the program Mafatih al-Hayat, Keys of Life. A hadith from Imam Sadiq alayhi al-Salam, and he says, لا غنى بالزوج عن ثلاثة أشياء فيما بينه وبين زوجته.
He says, when it comes to her husband, there are three things he needs to have. There is no غنى. There is no time where a person or a husband says, no, I don't need these. No, they need to exist constantly. Three things. The first thing is that he needs to become more acceptance. He accepts more from her. And by doing so, if he accepts from her, she will accept back from him. And he gains her love and return. وَهَوَاهَا وَحُسْنُ خُلُقِهِ مَعَهَا وَاسْتِعْمَالَهُ إِسْتِمَالَةِ قَلْبِهَا. And also he needs to have the best of morals with her when he deals with her. And he needs to see what she likes and dislikes, that he also uses that for his advantage to bring her closer to him. And the Imam Salamullah alayhi, and he explains and he goes to say, وَاِسْتِمَالَةِ قَلْبِهَا بِالْهَيْئَةِ الْحَسَنَةِ فِي عَيْنِهَا وَتَوْسِعَتِهِ عَلَيْهَا. And he also needs to present himself in a way where she accepts him more. And he says that he needs to give her more. So, تَوْسِعَتِ عَلَيْهَا is like, in terms of her needs, in terms of financials and money, he needs to give her, not be stingy. Buy her the things that she wants, clothes, shoes, bags, or whatever woman likes these days. He gives to her. When a person does all these things, his marriage will become a lot better. And in the same way that the man expects his wife to dress up for him and look nice for him, a man has to do the same thing, which is something that he alluded to alayhi salam in this hadith. And even Imam al-Kalim alayhi salam also said in the hadith, he says, تَهِيَّةُ الرَّجُلِ لِلْمَرْأَةِ مِمَّا تَزِيدُ فِي عَفَّتِهَا. Also, he said, when a person takes care of a woman in terms of finances, in terms of, you know, pleasing her, giving her all she needs, that will increase her chastity. Because now she's no longer in need of others when her husband is doing all the duties. So in this dunya, in this world, taking care of the wife has its merits, which is at least keeping the peace in the house, keeping the house a loving, caring house. In the hereafter, also, it has benefits. A hadith from Amir al-Mu'minin salamullah alayhi says, one day we were sitting and the Prophet sallallahu alayhi wa sallam entered, and Fatima alayhi salam was sitting next to the pot. She was cooking, and I was trying to, me myself, I was trying to clean the lanterns. And he says, the Prophet said to us, he called me, and I said to him, yes, ya Rasulullah. He says, hear from me that when a man helps his wife, because Amir al-Mu'minin was trying to help Fatima Zahra salamullah alayha, illa kana lahu bi kulli sha'ratin ala badanihi ibadat sana, for every hair he has on his body, Allah will give him a worship of 1 year. Siyamu nahariha wa qiyami layliha, he's fasting during the day and standing and praying doing tahajjud during the night. So just helping your wife in the house, Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala will give you so much reward in the hereafter as well. Inshallah, we will continue in other episodes. Until then, stay with us. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Driving past, walking fast, to the field of dreams, hear the children scream.
There was The Keys of Life by Voice of the Islamic Republic of Iran, IRIB English Radio.
Every corner represents a different image in my mind, a momentary emotion, space spent in time, in time.
Our voice comes from the heart of beautiful Iran.
This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.
Headlines, day 27 of the Israeli onslaught on Gaza. The regime pounds different areas in the besieged territory, including a UN-run school. The UN Health Agency calls for an urgent access for humanitarian aid into Gaza, where the civilian population is in dire need of basic supplies. And in Iran, President Raisi says the U.S. is the root cause of crimes being committed in the Gaza Strip. Everybody, it's